Hello and welcome to the first episode of our brand new Trump and the Presidency podcast series brought to you by BBC, Bimes Broadcasting Company. Your hosts today are Hala Bazaz and Matthew Simmons, two seniors at the University of California, Berkeley, and aspiring scholars of the American presidency. Today's episode is titled Twitter and Trump, the Toxic Duo, where we'll be discussing the largely undefined relationship between Twitter and the president. Today, we'll be looking into a buzzing aspect of the contemporary political time. President Trump has arguably employed the most controversial yet fascinating use of the social media platform I'm sure you are all familiar with, Twitter. Trump's unconventional employment of Twitter has reshaped what we believe to be modern political day communication. His use of the platform has sparked massive debate on both sides of the aisle on the effect it has had on our administration, society, and strengthening of political polarization. Due to Twitter being a recent development in the 21st century, there is no existing precedent or guidelines regarding how the president should or shouldn't utilize this tool. And as can be easily seen, there is an undeniably stark contrast of Trump's predecessor, former President Obama, how he used Twitter compared to how current President Trump uses it. This poses the question, which is the right way to do it, if any at all?
Understandably so. The Constitution makes no mention of any restraints that would be applicable to this topic. This creates a myriad of questions. Our main concern is examining the relationship between tweets and the official White House stance. Additionally, the relationship between Twitter and the presidency is largely undefined. What we want to do is engage in a conversation that can shed some light on how much or how little Trump's usage of Twitter can tell us about the overall administration and plight of the nation. While the content is controversial, Trump has introduced a radical way of communicating directly with the public. This has fostered a pseudo-intimate relationship with his base, fueling them to support his endorsees and bringing to boil a cauldron of hate and violence. We thought it would be a great idea to get the perspective of an average educated American voter, someone who follows politics but does not necessarily study or work within the field. Here with us today is Kareem Dakak, a graduate of UCLA with an economics degree, and now a private equity analyst at KKR. A broad question that we are interested in tackling is whether or not presidential tweets are official White House policy stances. On July 26, 2017, President Trump issued a tweet from his account handle, @RealDonaldTrump, about the acceptance of transgender service members in the military. It reads, quote, "Please be advised that the United States government will not accept or allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military, because our military cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgenders in the military would entail. Thank you." End quote. This tweet came under fire from five transgender service members and the Joint Chief of Staff, who did not believe this policy was legal or should go into effect. In fact, the transgender service members sued the president on the allegation that the policy was unconstitutional. So, Kareem, what are your opinions on this controversial tweet?
Yeah, so I think this is an interesting issue. Just because he says something obviously doesn't make it policy, but it does signal kind of the stance of the White House. I think it's interesting in this case, you know, him not consulting with military leaders as they did years back when they instituted the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, for example, with Congress. This is a very stark contrast, and it's essentially saying to the military, you know, the public opinion, like, ball is now in your court. So, now you guys have to decide what you're going to do.
You make some good points about how there was no discussion with military leadership before this tweet was sent out. And the advent of unilateral decision-making is prevalent in his bold tweets, where he does not consult with White House staffers before sending out important information to his 55.9 million followers. Trump has been utilizing his personal account @RealDonaldTrump to tweet about his presidential actions instead of using the officially recognized @POTUS account. This was the case for the transgender military ban tweet that we were talking about, and there was no discussion that followed on @POTUS. In fact, his personal account is more often used to send out tweets to the public. It's really interesting to note that Trump's personal account holds 34.1 million more followers than the POTUS account. What would you say is the strategy of utilizing two different accounts? And do you think using a personal account exhibits appropriate presidential behavior?
So I think that the strategy of utilizing two different accounts is a direct kind of read-through of his campaign, in where he ran as someone who's kind of above and beyond the traditional political structures. So in his campaign, he ran as Donald Trump rather than a representative of the Republican Party and someone who is kind of a confluence of Republican opinions. Instead, he just happened to run as a Republican, essentially. So I think with regards to Twitter, it does make sense that he would use his own account. I think, one, in terms of his strategy, he wants to seem as someone who is separate from these legal and political structures and play directly to his base. So I think that's the separation there. And then with regards to whether it exhibits appropriate behavior, I think I'm not certain about this, but I could see where, you know, he would argue tweets issued on his personal account are not subject to the same legal scrutiny that ones on the POTUS account are. So it might be a bit easier for him to directly convey his opinions without having to check through the all the legal channels to make sure he's not crossing any lines he shouldn't be on the POTUS account. But that's more so speculation from me, as someone who doesn't know the law completely.
Yeah, I really like the points that you brought up regarding both the personal Twitter account and the professional Twitter account, the @POTUS one. I think it's undeniable that Trump has implemented his own distinct style of using Twitter. And this is something that, as we all know, is widely talked about among the media and political commentators. But for you, Kareem, what impact do you see his tweets having on his constituents and the American people who his, you know, primary audience is too?
So I think that with regards to the effect on constituents, we have to think about it in the context of social media and all these issues that Facebook and Twitter and other platforms are having with kind of curtailing the spread of quote-unquote fake news. So whenever Trump tweets, you know, saying big victory, the average person, I think, is not going to sit there and read, you know, election results, think about whether what the implications are in terms of like how far the congressional battles got, like in Texas and Orange County, California, and these traditional red areas. And then think about it with regards to the Senate, the Republicans keeping that, and other governorships. But in general, kind of consolidating it all into big victory makes it very simple, and it gives something that his constituents can easily latch onto and spread. And so, as Matt, you kind of allude to, it's more so spreading the perception. And this is not limited to this tweet specifically or to the midterms. I think you can see it with regards to the tax reform that he pushed through. And, you know, whereas before, I think there'd be a lot more back and forth as to whether the corporate tax rate should be cut, what are the implications on the average person. I think when you simply look at it as a cut from 35% to 21% to 24%, it's seen it as a big victory. And I think these simple kind of victories are held up by Trump. And I think it's good political strategy, candidly. Not the specific issues, but I think simplifying everything and giving people an easy narrative to latch onto is good strategy, because it removes a lot of the noise that we're used to in politics that kind of created the sense that it was an elitist institution.
Yeah, I really like the points you were bringing up there about the two different Twitter accounts, the at POTUS account versus what's put on his personal account, which is still just at real Donald Trump. And I think, you know, regardless of, you know, which Twitter account, it's undeniable that Trump has implemented his own distinct style of using Twitter and using it as a communication device. This is something that's, as we know, widely talked about among the media and political commentators. But Kareem, for you, what do you think is the impact that you see his tweets having on his constituents?
So I think that, again, this is all part of the strategy that he had during the campaign. And I think that he, during the campaign, him and his team essentially realized that when they say certain things, they really resonate with a large base of voters in the U.S. And putting out these kind of, I don't want to say extreme, but very specific stances on certain issues, whether it be on the trade war or, you know, dealings with Iran or social policies. I think he and his team realized that his constituents really react to this kind of a style. And you see it playing out across the world. You know, populism is becoming very popular, and a lot of campaigns are, a lot of political campaigns, even in Brazil, Poland, you know, so on and so forth, are using kind of more extreme language. And I think it's kind of counterintuitive, because we think in the 21st century, a lot of business leaders, political leaders are more sensitive and more vulnerable to backlash against certain views. And so it really takes someone like Trump to string together all these specific views and sayings and harness them into kind of political power rather than a massive backlash. So I think, to answer your question more directly, it basically energizes his base and makes them excited about the results of the midterms, you know, regardless of the reality. So that hopefully in come 2 years' time, this will essentially be forgotten from a congressional perspective. I think the consensus was this was kind of bad news for the Republicans. But perhaps he's seeing this as them retaining power in the Senate and governorships as a source of energy for his base.
Yeah, and on the topic of, you know, energizing his base, we saw this right after the midterm election results with Trump tweeting, quote, "Tremendous success tonight. Thank you to all." And then again the next day tweeting, "Received so many congratulations from so many on our big victory last night, including from foreign nations, friends that were waiting me out and hoping on trade deals. Now we can all get back to work and hope things get done." And specifically, you know, in regards to this, what do you think his strategy was with sending out these tweets in particular?
So again, I think it's basically to change the narrative. I think like playing along with this campaign, he realized that his base is very loyal, and I think it interplays very well with social media, and that you have these echo chambers and your opinion kind of propels itself further much more than it did in the past. So it's a way of him distracting from the narrative on one side of, with Beto and, you know, Orange County and all these kind of large Democratic inroads to traditional Republican strongholds, that there was kind of this blue wave. I think it takes a lot of, it basically hits at that narrative pretty hard and re-energizes his base and gives them another narrative to propel forward. So he wants to keep people thinking that he's, you know, a strong and in charge authority figure. And whether or not things like the midterms go his way, he is able to keep the perception that he is doing well using his social media.
So what do you make of Trump's base taking the claims that he makes on Twitter as this high standard of absolute truth and without questioning any of its validity? And also, you know, on Trump's account, is it wrong for a president to knowingly spread misleading information via Twitter? Arguably, other presidents have misled the general public just via speeches as opposed to a social media platform. What do you think this new way of spreading false information says about our country and the direction we're heading?
So I think with respect to his base, I think this is kind of just the reality we have to accept. And I think it's easy for us to sit here and say, you know, that his base accepts this as absolute truth. And in reality, a lot of the time, people on the other side of the spectrum will do similar. If not with the presidential account, then maybe with other very simplified or extreme claims. With that being said, I think, unfortunately, it depends on the individual to kind of parse through this noise and do their own research using different resources. And as we know, this is not traditionally done by people. So I think that's just a failing on an individual level, but it's pretty difficult to correct across the board. And then with respect to Trump misleading people intentionally, I think you're spot on in saying that other presidents have done this. I think at the end of the day, he is a politician. And I think, again, it's on the individual to kind of sort out the truth from the false. And I think, you know, the American public has been misled far more in the past, if anything, on things like the war on drugs, or the Vietnam War, or, you know, social issues. And I think now at least we have such a multitude of different opinions and resources and kind of offsetting news that we can look to in light of these kind of brash claims that Trump makes. So we're not as reliant on, we're not sitting there watching a TV and like, the you know, that being the only thing that we hear all day. So I think it's difficult to kind of form like one view on it, but I think all in all, it's something that we should expect to continue. It's not something that we can fix very easily. And we just have to prepare ourselves in the future for dealing with this kind of reality.
Yeah, very true. Very true. What's funny, just, you know, sitting here throughout this conversation, and especially putting it in the context of the course material that we've been presented, thinking back, the founding fathers would have had no way to imagine a platform like Twitter or instant messaging or anything of the sorts. Yet they still established a system where they intended to have enough institutional barriers to prevent this charismatic demagogue finding his way to the presidency by, you know, instituting things such as the Electoral College. And they were fearful that the general public, while they should, you know, have a say in how their country is led and by whom, they understood the reality is that they could be drastically misinformed, lied to, and that their trust could have been abused. And that's unfortunately what we're seeing today. And some of the institutional barriers are working, while others are not, you know, depending on just your partisan bias.
Our world has changed with the rise of social media. We should think of the future of politics as continuing in its current direction, rather than seeing Trump as a one-off phenomenon. Trump's employment of Twitter has resulted in a cult of personality. where his followers believe all that he claims. He has employed an antagonistic rhetoric that has bred a pseudo-intimate relationship with his base of supporters, making unfounded claims that he affirms are undeniably true. The way we consume news and media has evolved. Soundbites that proliferated in news television have evolved into tweets and other short-form social media that can quickly gather steam in online echo chambers. While we may find stability in the balance of our political institutions with regard to policy implementation, we must also acknowledge that these same institutions do not move quickly enough to keep up with popular opinion. Staying true to his words, my use of social media is not presidential. It's modern day presidential. Thanks for tuning in. Hala Bazaz
and Matt Simmons signing out.